So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
In the beautiful Sharm El Sheikh with a nice sea view. How are you feeling today?
Yes, a little bit tired with all these days in the sea, but still energetic.
Good. So what brought you to the sea first time?
The sea, you mean, or freediving?
Tell me about the sea.
I think that my first great interest for the sea came with Jacques Cousteau documentaries. When I was a child, I was like this long documentaries of Jacques Cousteau with that nice off voice and to look during hours at underwater world. I was liking it a lot. That was in that time, we would call that the world of silence. So that was bringing some kind of peacefulness. And yet we were watching a documentary, so the parents, they were not after you, like watch something else.
Yeah.
So I think it started with Jacques Cousteau.
Ah. Did you ever dream like, oh, maybe one day I'll be like down there exploring as a child?
Yes, yes, yeah? Sure. I still dream of that. I still dream of that. When I think about my abilities in freediving or friends, I have one friend, lady friend, that has been like, pilot for submarines, exploration submarines.
Yeah.
So she went 2,000 meters deep.
Wow.
So, I mean, yeah, it's fascinating. If you look docs about creature of the abyss, oh man, it's really impressive, these kind of beings we have on the planet. So for sure, I'm attracted by studying the sea.
Yeah. But you didn't go straight in your life into freediving.
No.
You first went into a monastery. Why did that happen? Because, well, it's not a very common decision.
No, it's for most people, it's not a common decision. But look, that in my family, they're not really Christian. My father is hardcore scientist, so he needed like an approach of spirituality that wouldn't be stained with belief systems. So very fast he discovered like Zen meditation. Then he got hooked up inside of the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. My mother is Tai Chi professor since really long time, so there was like also these questions of energy, macrobiotic, and we were a little bit made sensitive about the subtleties of how to handle ourselves. And then when my parents split it off and that we found ourselves alone as children, of course you're looking for this, you're looking for your father, looking for your mother.
Yeah.
So the only way I could access them was to practice their stuff. So to see my mom, I had to do like workshops of Tai Chi, and to see my dad, like workshops of meditation. So.
And did you find it weird, or because probably other kids around didn't have that?
Oh,
right?
There wasn't any kids around. That's for sure. I mean, in the retreats.
Yeah.
And
but like in your school life and before, you know, probably the other kids' parents were like policemen and, you know, and maybe a nurse or something. And they didn't have these interests of spirituality.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But I mean, I've always been a little bit original. And as you noticed, I'm bigger. So it's true that I never really was like a super social person at school, even by my physical condition, or let's say the armors I would put over myself to protect my vulnerability. That was things I wouldn't really share before I indeed became monk at one point. I wouldn't share my ideas about spirituality and stuff like that. It was not really fashion in that time.
Like, oh yeah.
like the books we had in that moment were like the Andean prophecies and stuff like that. So it was really like the very beginning of some kind of spiritual quest. So for me, it was more integrated to the family, and it was easy to understand. If I did my first retreats of meditation, my father was here around. So if I was in sorrow for eventually, like, you know, sometimes you go to these meditation retreats and you have like a get down or something, like something gets back from the past and you feel vulnerable. I could go, Daddy.
Yeah.
And he would like give me a hug and give me some love. And that's what made that it was easy for me, because I've always been integrated into my family and surrounded with a lot of love.
Yeah.
That's what makes eventually the difference with people that step into meditation because they don't like themselves anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Like, So it was like pretty easy. I like to say I fell in the soup when I was a child, yeah. Or even got born in it.
Yeah, you know. It's a good choice for this life.
Yeah, it's more easy. It's more easy. How did you discover meditation? I didn't really discover it.
Yeah, you grew up with that.
Yeah, it's a little bit like if you grow with the Kazakh, it would feel normal. You horse ride at 5 years old.
Yeah.
So in my family, it's a little bit normal. My brothers, they also practice meditation, and everyone around is a little bit like sensitive about it. It's like an undodgeable of our family.
Okay, but then becoming a monk, was that a decision or also falling in a soup?
No, look, there is two ordinations. You receive the first ordination that we call like Bodhisattva ordination. Let's say it's like the first step, okay? They say they will cut the first lock, so you're not necessarily shaving your head, you're not receiving the traditional clothings. And you're receiving, let's say, half of the rules, okay? Only 5 rules, not 10. So it's a little bit like a trial, you try, how you're gonna feel. And me, anyway, I was going through like mystical crises. You know, I had that teenage where all my sorrow and difficulties in life were emphasized to a spiritual level instantly. Mm. It was like God, that was the fault of God. The society, and I wouldn't take accountability for my own victimism or sorrow.
So everyone else was guilty.
Not everyone else, but like in big generalities. Mm. Okay, the society. I don't want to live in the society. Mm-hmm. Or I don't want any religion.
Yeah.
So I let grow my hair. Yeah. Dreadlocks. Started to live like a little bit like outlaw. Mm. Understand things like this. And eventually went a little bit too far in my, discoveries and stuff. I started to suffer deeply. And this suffering was related to visions I had of Jesus, the understandings I had of God and all that. So it became way too much.
Mm-hmm.
Spiritual suffering for the daily life I was handling, okay? So one day it came like a burst, an emotional burst, some kind of enlightenment, awakening, like a flash of boom.
Mm.
And I took the strong decision, okay, I want to receive this ordination of Bodhisattva. Okay, so I called my dad, which made it all easy. I just had to call my dad and say, look, I want the ordination. What am I supposed to do? Okay, you will follow this master, not the same tradition than me, because, you know, he already did a lot to get rid of his family, so he introduced me to another master and stuff, and then you just go in the rails. All these guys, they will tell you, you have to sew that.
Were you afraid? Because does it, like, when you sign up for that, it does take you a certain time to get to the ordination, right? It's not like you arrive on a day one, you're something, you have to go through.
Yeah, there is like, let's say, like,
you have to
kind
say
of selection for sure. You want to be practicing, okay? So you're not gonna ask the ordination if you don't practice the practices of the monks.
And how long do you have to stay to get the ordination?
It depends on the master, mostly.
Approximately.
I mean, maybe you will do 1 year as an aspirant monk.
Mm-hmm.
Before to ask for the monk ordination.
Yeah.
You have people that come and they say, no, I don't want the pre-ordination. I straight want the monk ordination.
Yeah.
And then we are a bit on.
But so
we
like...
We have to warn the people that this is not going to solve nothing.
Yeah. Know? So how old were you at that
point? I was 19, just 20 when I received the first ordination.
And wasn't it scary for the... No, but when you went for the ordination?
No, it was not scary. No. I
so
knew
like,
my
I'm
going to
spend a year
childhood.
There, or I'm going to spend more years there.
No, what was really scary for me was like the mundane, ordinary life.
Mm.
What was scary for me was to take a bus, was to go to school, was to go to university, to see the same guys of my age being you know, busy with what went on TV or girls or holidays or parties on the weekend. And I was just totally obsessed by the sense of my life, the use. Why am I alive? What can I do to help? It's a catastrophe. The world was a catastrophe for me. And I really had that intuition that if I could do something with myself to not suffer, I would be better. So, you know, I just took what was available next to me. I tried other things, but the Zen meditation was, you have the stick, and at least during 1.5 hours at the beginning, it was like, during 1.5 hours, I'm not spoiling myself, I'm not doing bad, I'm like staying still in front of the walls, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing bad.
And then, did you get some salvation or some relief? Or?
Well, it took long years until I forgot I was looking for it.
Oh, that's how it usually happens.
Yeah, no, I mean, like now when the people, they ask me, I would say, yeah, sure, I am awakened, enlightened, I reached spiritual liberation and all that. Yeah, all this, I've done it, it's behind me. Now I struggle with ordinary problems like anyone else have, you know. What was a little bit different is when you have received this preordination, because the taste of it is a little bit different. It's your first one, okay? And then you wonder why you would become monk, why you would really take the robe, why you would really shave your head, why you would really look like the others. And at that moment, the decision I took was more of an altruistic decision. It's like, I was super happy as a bodhisattva, and I think it's the nature of what we expect from a human being. Is to be healthy, is to be magical, is to be able to selflessly help everyone. But the monks, something else, you know, they stay in temple, they shave their head, they have a code of conduct, and so the decision of stepping inside of the monk condition is a little bit some kind of sacrifice somewhere, and you're not going to do it. I didn't do it for me. Okay, I remember saying, I will never ask the monk ordination. I'm so happy as a bodhisattva because look at me. I am big, I am strong, I talk loud, I can do performances, sport, I have good creative ideas, I'm half crazy. You know I love you and I love everyone. So I'm typically bodhisattva. But I have nothing that of that hard face of monks. But when I... To be honest with you, when I saw, let's say, the state of the monks, their lack of vitality, their lack of acceptation, their lack of openness. I mean, like for me, spirituality like was more like, you know, Rastaman, hippie, everybody hugs each other, everybody loves each other. It's a little bit shallow, but you feel super nicely surrounded. And then you step in that community where almost if the people bark on you, silence, shh, do this, do that. I thought it was really rude. And so I took it as a personal responsibility that if I want to change that, I will have to change it from inside. Okay, I have to become a monk, follow all these rules, receive, be accepted as a disciple of the master, study with the master, get certified as a master myself. And then I hope all the goodness will have survived, okay?
Yeah.
Because the goodness, the sweetness, the love, you had it before.
Mm.
It's not something, the awakening, the enlightenment, all that you had it before.
Mm.
But it's true that to take the decision of becoming a monk, mostly in 21st century, mostly in Occident, well, that doesn't mean nothing. In Thailand, you become monk, you're gonna have, they will give you the robe, here you have to buy it, okay? Or do it yourself. And then you're going to be, you don't pay the public transport anymore as a monk, you know, and here you have become a monk and the next day you have to go back to work.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything you miss about the monk life?
You mean the temple life?
Yeah, the temple life.
Yeah, you don't need a watch.
Oh, there is a gong, right?
Yeah, you have the feel. You don't need a phone because you're in contact with everything. It depends the temple. Me, I had very, very free life. People would come only for the retreat. The rest of the year I would be alone in the temple with the elements. So, of for sure, I miss being alone in 60 kilometer square for myself, talking with the wind, meditating in the snow. When I go back to the temple sometimes in the afternoon, the community thinks it's too hot to practice inside.
Yeah.
And they want to practice outside. I still have issues, but this dojo I built, it is beautiful. So of course I miss it a lot.
Yeah.
But it's part of the thing. At the beginning, when I shaved my head, I was missing my dreadlocks. It was
true.
Really handy, you know.
Yeah.
I had flies moving around. I was like a pillow. I didn't really have to take care of my hygiene. Everywhere I would go in the world, I would be considered as a cool guy because I have dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Now you change, you're bald head. So depending on where you go, people would confuse you with like Nazi skinheads and stuff.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with a complete other thing. Then when the guys ask you why you are bald head, I'm monk, you have all these confrontations. Sure, I miss my monk life, my temple life.
Yeah,
but it's part of the game.
So how does one from a temple become interested in diving? Because you weren't by the sea or by a deep pool or anywhere close to that, right?
You know, the more you get free, the more you get hooked by something that just passes your mind. You get free, get free, get free, get free. And suddenly, I like to make the joke when I'm on the platform and I look at myself being a little bit scared to do that deep dive. I would say to the guys around me, I say, wow, what happened? That, like five minutes ago, I was a monk in a temple and suddenly I'm like in wetsuit on top of the platform. But what happened? Yeah, I must have followed a thought that I was super trained to let pass during all these years. So after 20 years, 25 years of meditation, where all the thoughts, you've left them pass, the thoughts that have resisted to all that, they are strong ones.
Yeah.
And I just realized that when we would go to the sea, the days off of the meditation, we'd go to the sea, I was scared in the water, of the depths, of the shark, of whatever could come back from the depths.
Yeah.
And I realized I had it a little bit also inside of meditation, this intuition that something deep down meditation could come back to surface and modify my life. Yeah, so that just happened. Eventually that just happened.
But what were the steps? Did you go to a place where you could, did you meet a person?
Yeah, I actually discovered that you could learn that.
You started looking for it?
Not really. I was like having, like we had like a travel in Thailand, and while doing a jogging, I got stopped by guys that were advertising for free diving.
Oh.
I see the video, like a guy free falling in the water in meditation posture that was like beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is that? And the lady straight at
so
the right
So you were
moment,
at that time still a monk?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I
didn't
became
know
monk
that.
At 20 and discovered the existence of free diving. I was like 36 years old.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it really took time.
Like Jesus year age.
Yeah, after it. like
okay,
really after
so
it.
Okay, so you're jogging in the morning, someone is advertising for free diving, you take the leaflet, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm like, what is that? The free diving, when you'll be done losing your breath, maybe you want to learn how to hold it. And that sounded so paradoxical. Like what?
Yeah.
Okay, 3 days course, you dive to 18 meters. And I realized that this is the dream I was having. Like these guys are going to teach you how to dive underwater and all that. Wow, how much it costs? Looks. Okay, monk budget. Monk budget. Okay.
Yeah.
No. But next year when I could do again holidays, this time I looked for instructors before and specifically told them, guys, I'm Zen master, I would like to discover free diving.
Yeah.
So for them, it was really impressive. They thought I would hold my breath half an hour or something like this.
That's what I would think.
Yeah. No, I just like broke my sinuses on the first dive and didn't manage to do the 2 minute requirement on the first trial.
Yeah.
Like all these other guys, the peer pressure, I was like insane. And I realized at that moment how ridiculous I was saying I'm Zen master.
Okay.
Zen master. Ah, yeah, and you can't do this, you can't do that. And I realized that for most of the people to be Zen master or to have that title of master, was suggesting that you would do incredible things.
I think it's kind of from the movies, you know, something along the, you probably do like Kung Fu as well, or you know, you're in this temple on the top of the mountain and you do some mysterious stuff and you can read the mind, or you can, you know, like you're afraid to like, oh no, I'm not gonna think bad thoughts because he's gonna know or something like this. But that's a movie thing.
Yeah, that, I mean, for all, let's say, the magical aspects of what is like the intuition or your subtle abilities, they will develop with meditation.
Of course, yeah.
But you would expect like random stuff, you know, like when you or obvious stuff. You see the Shaolin master, you would expect that if you smack him in the face, he wouldn't even move. And the Zen master, you would say, okay, you're going to hold your breath for 3 minutes, and that the guy is going to stay, and that's going to be a joke because he doesn't care about himself. And then I realized the lack in between the vision I had of a master, what I really was, the vision of others.
As what they think like, a master should be like.
You know, like people, they meet me, I say, hello, I'm Zen master. And, and they're like, but who's the freedive instructor then?
Yeah.
It's me too. Ah, but that is not possible. You're supposed to be in a temple meditating all day long, you know, IKEA mind, like I should be in that drawer here. So I did the effort to emancipate myself. Freediving helped me a lot. I needed emancipation.
So it took a year, then you're saying you saw from the time you were jogging, saw that bank budget, so you saved up or something, and then you came back and did the course?
Yes. Yes, like as a monk, as the responsible of the temple, I would receive a little bit of money, which was pretty impossible to spend. Okay, so I could like do some holidays. So we went back to Mexico, and then I did like the proper freediving course, AIDA 2.
Yeah.
With the full thing, the theory, la la la.
And how was it? Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it a lot because I made like, there was like four guys in the course of my age, all guys like ready to do like new kinds of adventure, smiley guys, wow. And I mean, all the people I was like mingling with were all monks with 20 years older than me.
Mm.
You know, it's not like at 20 years old, you go in a monastery, you're going to find like eventually a girl of your age, forget about it. And another guy of your age, is going to be as crazy as you, okay? So to meet all these friends, to learn from someone younger than me. My instructor was like 25 years old and I was like 35.
Yeah.
So to learn from someone younger, it was really good for my humility and everything I learned, like instantly, I considered it like super valuable in the career of a monk. And by now I think it's obligatory.
Yeah.
Like you're a monk, you can't hold your breath 2 minutes. Like all of my students can do that. And they never even tried meditation, understand? They even so into it that they would do the opposite way. They would like start freediving and get attracted by meditation while doing freediving.
Yeah.
So the opposite, it's a little bit of a weird way. I need to break free, you know, from the master, from the religion. I mean,
so what was the transition? Because now you are here, you're in Egypt, you are not in the temple anymore. So
that's a very valid question.
Something yummy
being
offered the temple didn't.
So when I came back from that AIDA 2 and saw all the beauties that could be learned in freediving, I said that to my master. You know, master, I think it's very important that we all develop our abilities, and I would really like to show the exercises the guy they showed us for AIDA 2, and he simply said, look, me, I teach Zen because I'm Zen master. Gabriela, she teach yoga because she's a yoga instructor. Constance, she teach like tribal dancing because she's a tribal dancing instructor. Considering the Buddha never taught meditation, the fact that you, Loic, are a Buddha is not enough. If you want to teach breathing to my students, to my disciples, I would like you to become an instructor of it. Okay. So I went for AIDA 3 and AIDA 4 and master course and instructor course. I was not really I liked the thing, it was cool.
But so you morded it so you can bring it back to the temple and teach
it. Oh, I had a tree, hello, I see my instructor, hello, she asked me what I do in life. Yeah, I'm Zen monk, I brought my temple to follow your course.
Yeah.
People are impressed, no, take it easy, take it easy. La, 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 la. So I did all my studies of freediving as a monk, okay? And then when I became instructor and I started to propose breathing inside of the temple, they started to be worried that there would be blacks out, and they asked me, okay, if you want to teach this, we need like a liability release, we need you to have a company to be insured. And I'm like, come on, you crooked me. I've passed 4 years studying freediving in order to bring you the pearl of vitality. And so when I realized that everything I did was seeming worthless to them, I left.
And
like they realized, I was like, okay, you don't even want to get like vital. Okay, look at me, like I was like overweight. The reflection I had of my body was not bringing any happiness. The social life I was living was ridiculous. Okay, like in a temple, your social life is ridiculous. So I needed something else. So then, you know, it's like politics, religion is really nasty when you start to feel that the community is speaking in your back, that the master is playing both sides. Went pretty fast that I was like, okay, I'm going.
You're going. Okay.
That was not an easy decision.
Yeah.
And it took me, now it's like I left in 2017, we are in 2024. I have no regrets anymore, but I wouldn't eventually have said that 1 year ago.
Yeah.
It's really, sacrifice to leave the temple.
And did you become you had your freediving instructor course done and everything. So did you straight away became applied for a job somewhere or?
Yeah, no, I thought like first I created the website. I was doing website before I had like a concept called Biotechnozen. And then when I got out of the temple, I looked for a job. But imagine you go to the employment agency of France and they ask you, what's your job? You say, I'm a monk. What are you looking for? Freedive instructor. So you're out of it.
Yeah, you're definitely.
You're like people block.
Yeah.
So after a few months, I realized that I had to do something in order to make money. I created Deep Zen website thinking that because I'm monk and freediver, everybody would be naturally drawn to me, which wasn't the case. So indeed, at one point, I just applied for freedive instructor. There was like an offer in Bali. So I went with my family in Bali during 2-3 months and saw that, okay, what kind of lifestyle it is. Okay, you're on the beach. It's mainly like beach people, like people that
holidays,
are healthy,
they
are naturally attracted to yoga, meditation and all that. So I thought, yeah, okay. So if I become good at freediving, since I'm good at being a monk, eventually, I would unite both and be able to survive with a job, which I wouldn't have to go and, you know, like be with a boss and stuff. So I worked 2 months in Bali for Ocean Prana and then decided to start compete in order to create my own advertisement.
Who did encourage you that? Because not everyone who goes to a freediving course does it go to competitions or to compete. You also meet people that were
like first I met Dan Verhoeven in Bali. Dan Verhoeven is a very famous photographer of freedivers. Okay, so okay, we trip on the freedivers, but they are all the pics of the same guy.
Yeah,
he's really good at taking pictures of freedivers. So I meet him in Bali and I wanted to have a picture of me sitting in meditation underwater. So I tried to seduce him, offer him some beers, la la la. And he says to me, you have a project, you want something from me? And I explain him the picture I would like he does. And he's a little bit doubting, like, explain me, why would I do that? Like, are you someone? You know, are you famous or something? for me to do it for free. And I'm like, yeah, I'm the deepest monk in the world, man. I say that to the guy. And he asks me, okay, how deep you dive? Is that about 50 meters? And he said to me, oh, you're halfway.
was that a slap in your face?
Yeah, it was a slap in my face. And it teached me a lot about life.
Yeah.
When most of the time, when you think you've achieved something, you're just halfway.
Yeah.
Okay. We're always reaching halfway. The second half, you have to do it yourself.
Oh.
So, okay. Well, we made the picture. La la la. That was cool. But that was like this vexation. Okay. 50. I'm a monk. If I want to say I'm the deepest monk and 50 is not enough, I need to dive 100. So I got the virus. Okay. Mm. The ego challenge. It's important to have an ego challenge because universal challenges don't exist. It's the same for everyone. So it's not really original. But to go for an ego challenge, that will cost you a lot. Okay. So I had to train, compete. Why to compete? Because the conditions of safety during competition are much higher than during training. About the same price. That if you want to make a name, it's like, or you write few books, or you're a super nice YouTuber with hundreds of views per video, or you're a little bit simple and you just smash national records and sell them to TV and stuff like this. So understand that when I started training and did my first national records and went on the news, wow, it's a bit like suddenly I had recognition for what I did for myself. Which was completely inexistent
in a monk so far. Life.
In a monk life, no, of course not. You know, like the little hair of ego showing out, shlack, tack, tack. So it's like, oh, I should not be rich. I shouldn't even desire that. Oh, la la, if you think this lady is pretty, look on the ground. Oh, no, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. So you're always don't. And I don't think it's good, even for monks.
Mm.
Why? When I be old, maybe I say the opposite. So that's how it went. Like, at a certain point, I was out of the temple without income. So I worked a little bit.
Deep in the sea. And how long did it take you to set the first record?
Well, not this long. Actually, a decision, it's easy, understand? To make records and to let go and to, that was like 62 meters, the first record. So it took me about maybe 2.5 months of training from reaching 40, 45 to get to 62. And these 62 were actually super easy. Because that was the challenge of scoring a national record. And the stress of the dive became a catalyst. I remember announcing the dive in 2 minutes 32 for 62 meters. And I did it in less than 2 minutes. So which is like, wow, Loic, you went just 30 seconds faster than what you foreseen.
Yeah.
So I realized that I was even like putting obstacles to myself. You're good at this, man.
Mm.
You can smash record. The only problem you have is that you believe that monks, they are not allowed to smash records, to compete, to shine, to be strong, and to say in the end, yeah, I'm the deepest monk in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So it was also like a very nice way to emancipate myself from this monk conditioning.
Mm. Yeah. But you didn't stop there. You went for 100 meter.
Yeah. Thing is, I would make more money with trying to gather crowdfundings or little funds to compete and making play that monk story, create that monk story. I was getting a little bit more money than by teaching freediving and giving I the tools. I would get tired. Sometimes it would be frustrating. So yeah, I kept on competing because that was my job. They're gonna give me a few thousands of euro for 2 competition, so I'm gonna sew my own clothes, I'm not gonna buy any new fins, I'm gonna save some money. And I would make more money by making little sacrifices on the donations than on really working. Now it has changed. Why? Because I made a name. I made multiple national records. People are like, oh, Charmel Cher, Loïc Vuillemin. Ah, yeah, his national record for Switzerland. I saw him on TV, da, 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 da. And people come because they understand that I can offer a quality eventually higher than random regular instructors.
And what is the aim now? Because you are soon going to prepare for another deep dive.
So the aim has always been to do remarkable performances. Freediving, it's easy to make a performance that it will impress the people, okay? When the guy is doing tennis, I don't know, I wouldn't feel like, wow, this is so great, I want to do tennis. You know what I mean? There is something in freediving that that fascinates the people. So what I don't like in freediving is these guys breaking records and coming back and bleeding and shaking on surface or blacking out over and over and over. And that story where all the deep freedivers are gonna die and na-na-na. So me, the aim has always been to represent. I dive as a monk, as a Swiss, as a father, as a husband, as an instructor. So when I early turn, for example, because it was too challenging, I'm happy because I'm still a safe freediver and I can come at surface, say I'm okay with a smile. This is the most important. Now, understand that the way to climb the mountain and the way to go down is the same. So you become good, become the best. Do you really stop when you're the best? No, not really. I do this more year of competition and I stop. Social life is catching me back. My daughter is needing more money for what she's doing. I can feel the call of the temple becoming stronger and stronger. My family is not really needing me as a man in the house anymore. So I think, going
back to the monk life.
I have a lot of people that need my help in that way, more than people that need my help for freediving.
Yeah.
Like, how many people decide to be monk? How many people decide to be freedive instructor? If you really want to go somewhere in life, I mean, and I received it.
So it's another transition.
Yeah, and I still don't know if the bridge are still standing. You know, like, what do I do? Do I go back to the temple? Do they really want me? Do they really need me? I can't really push myself inside of it. Some friends of mine say, Loïc, it's much more easy to build the second temple than the first one. Do I need to create my own community where the guys, they would be some kind of like monk divers? I don't know what.
Yeah. So what would your master answer to all of these questions?
My master is very happy that one of the disciples has found his way. That's what he said. Like most of the other disciples are very happy that I'm not there anymore because they can access him. I was a bit taking all the place. I'm big. All the attention. And he loves me really a lot. So he wouldn't bother about making an effort to teach to the number three or number four. You know, like number one is enough in his mind. But when friends, they say, oh, master, do you see Loïc, what he's doing? He's on the news. And No, what is he doing? And he just says, do you think it's okay for a monk to compete and all that? He will just answer, you know what, guys, I'm really happy that at least one of my disciples has found a way. Okay?
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. I miss him a lot. I miss that monk life. I'm not always super enthusiastic about playing the clown, you know, in the water. Yeah, I'm a monk, I'm gonna dive deep, It's still freaky, it's still skills of freediver and not skills of monks. But I do that to represent. You know, when I see in Switzerland that there is like 300 people more registered in the Federation of Freediving in 1 year, I'm like, you've done a good job. When I see that the video, like when Dojo invites me to speak about breathing for the monks and that the video has a big amount of view, I'm like, that's the good job I wanted to do. I really want the people to improve their vitality, and their vitality not only physically, but physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, socially, that we can really become like what we wish to be, you know? So freediving is just a way, and I would even say meditation also, you know? At the basics, I'm a good guy, altruistic. I have a lot of dreams for humanity. And let's say with my little intelligence and simplicity, I chose monk freediving to pass my message.
Yeah.
Deep.
So when is the competition?
From 16 to 23 of May. So okay. At the end of this month, I quit teaching. Mm. It's going to be like a little bit woohoo, financially speaking, because sponsors are a little bit shy this year, I guess.
So if anyone is listening to the podcast and wants the sponsors, they can make
donations, sponsors. If someone wants to sponsor a monk that freedives, it's great. They need to have the product that goes with, of course.
Have a crowdfunding as well this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Crowdfunding.
So we're going to link that in our podcast.
It's really sweet. And let's see, the objective is to score again some national records, because people are used to that, like Loic, when he dies, he scores national records.
You can't disappoint them, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I represent. So I'm the best Swiss freediver in depth. So I would like to, for the last year, I'd let the clean place, you know? Mm. You have 100 meters to beat. Eventually, I score 1 meter more, but that's not sure. And then 88 in free immersion and bifin would be nicer that it's 90, so everybody remembers.
Yeah.
And I can say now I'm the coach of Swiss team. Mm. You want to beat my records? I'll be enchanted to teach you how.
Super. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all of from Zen to freediving and to maybe back to the temple, huh?
Yeah, I wish. Sooner or later.
Yeah.
Sooner or later.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.